Today, the financial planners are in the house, and since Valentine's Day isn't too far in the rearview mirror, we're going to discuss the impact of money on love. And here's the deal. It's often not a good impact. Finances are the leading cause of stress in many relationships. A lot of us know that. But you may not know is that arguing about money is the top predictor of divorce. This is according to a K-State researcher who has studied this. So maybe this is a good time to get our arms around this idea of love and money. Here to talk about it is Alex Petrovic. He's founder of Petrovic Financial Services. And Alex, good to have you again.
Good morning.
David Jackson's with the Financial Planning Association. David, good morning to you.
Good to see you, Steve.
Barbara McMahon is president of Innovest, a financial partners in Brookside. Barbara, nice to have you.
It's good to be here.
Did I say Innovest correctly?
Yes, you did.
Good deal, yeah. Before we get into love and money, let's talk about some recent developments in the news that might affect investors. The U.S. and international stock markets are all down this year, and they've even hit correction territory recently. David, what's going on out there?
You know, it's been kind of an ugly start to the year.
Yeah,
people are a little bit concerned. People that are looking at their statements, their 401ks, are like, no, it's a 201k again.
So. When it's down, I never look, just for the record.
And that's the best thing you can do for yourself.
I don't ever take a look then. Yeah. How bad is the correction going on?
Well, you know, so far this year, we're down about 5 or 6%. So it's come back from where it was earlier in the year. But we're still in negative territory, and we're down quite a bit from the highs from last year. So from the highs last year, we're in correction territory.
Barbara, what's causing all this?
Oh, gosh, several things. Uncertainty with China, energy prices also have something to do with it. The Federal Reserve is not giving out clear signals, and that makes people anxious. Mm-hmm. I would say those are probably about the big three.
You know, Alex, the funny thing about energy is, you know, you think the falling gasoline prices would be a boost to the economy, and yet it's happened and happened dramatically when it comes to the price of the pump, and still the impact on the economy isn't good. You can't win, it seems
like. It takes
like.
A while for those benefits to show up, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And on the negative side, many traders or large institutions think it's a foreshadowing of certainly less demand or the recession word.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, the January employment report recently released by the Labor Department shows unemployment in the U.S. dropping to 4.9%. That's the lowest reading since February of 2008. That's good news, isn't it, David?
It's very good news. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are a lot of times when the stock market is conflating the news, and even though you have some good news, people were acting negative. And like you're talking about with the energy prices, normally that would be a really good thing. But, you know, it's like, what is the bigger picture regarding these gas prices? And kind of scares people.
Yeah. Barbara, with all this change, all this stuff in flux out there, what are you advising your clients these days in terms of shifts to portfolios, selling, buying? What are you saying?
What I'm saying is stick to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Invest in those things that were good for you before the fluctuations began. Have a clear focus on what it is your money needs to achieve for you. Don't make knee-jerk reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of stay the course, but have a conversation, and especially bring up if something in your financial life has changed, because some people do need to adapt, but others just need to stay the course, grit their teeth, and move on.
Alex, you saying anything differently?
No, not at all. You know, and it's part of the human nature. When the market's at all-time highs, clients want more of it because it feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
And when the market's down, they want none of it because it feels unsafe. But it's actually the opposite. And when everybody wants something, it's usually we're a little ahead of ourselves. So now, you know, for long-term investors, which most of our clients are, they're in it for retirement, this is an opportunity, unless you want to buy high.
You know, David, there's an April 30th deadline looming to take advantage of certain Social Security drawing strategies. What about that?
Well, you know, there are some loopholes that were built into Social Security that gave people an opportunity to do a technique called file and suspend, where you could take advantage of getting a spousal benefit for a while and then maybe switching over and getting your own benefit later. And so Congress finally realized that they created this loophole and they closed it. And so people who are in that 65 to 66 age range still have time to take advantage of some of these techniques because the loophole closes around May 1 of this year. So if you're in that age range, you should be talking to your financial advisor to get some advice on what is the best strategy to take your Social Security.
And there's also a deal involving IRA and health savings account contributions for tax year 2015. Apparently, there's still some leeway to make contributions along those lines, Barbara. What about that?
Well, you can still make a contribution for 2015 up to the tax filing deadline, which actually is April 18th this year, because April 15th is a holiday in Washington, D.C. So in an IRA, you can put $5,500, or if you are over the esteemed age of 50, you can add an extra $1,000. Your HSA, you can do $3,350 for an individual, or $6,650 for a family if you're over 55, an additional $1,000. But that is taken directly from your taxable income. Mm-hmm. And it can be a very powerful way to save money on taxes and benefit yourself long term.
Still, Alex, all this stuff strikes me as kind of complicated. You have to know these deadlines, different changes in the law, and it's never the same from one year to the next.
Yeah, this is true. As long as Congress is in session, then you're going to have changes, because they're the ones that write the laws.
And they're always doing it.
And they're always doing it. That's what they're paid to do.
Well, let's turn to our main topic here today, ladies and gentlemen, love and money. What do we know about the stress that money puts on relationships, David? And not that it ever involved my situation at all. I just want to put that out there away.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys were special.
Yeah,
you and
I
your
guess
wife
we are.
Special,
yeah, we're the special
category.
But, you
know, I think most people realize sex and money are the two biggest things that people argue about. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we're not talking about sex on the radio. That'd be a really tough conversation. Mm-hmm. But money is just as difficult.
Ratings would go up, though. If you want to switch, it's not too late. We can go there. Our producer's saying go there.
Yeah, I'm afraid of it.
Let's go for the numbers here on public radio.
My wife might be listening anyway. So
yeah.
And I don't really want to talk too much with my wife listening anyway about money, because it is just such a friction with couples. Let me give you a perfect example. When I've been doing this about 20 years now. And when I first started, one of my first or second year in the business, I had a couple come in and sat down and talk to me. And I think the wife had gotten some kind of settlement. So they were coming in and she wanted to grow the money. The husband was like, no, I'm really wanted to be low risk. I don't want to take any risks. So they left my office without making any decision. They said, we'll get back with you later. The wife calls me up maybe 3-4 weeks later and says, hey, I want to set up an appointment with you, open up an account. She came in by herself. I went ahead and opened up the account. 2 weeks later, the husband calls me and cusses me out because he saw the statement seeing where she had opened up the account without him. And said, I thought I told you. And I'm like, hey, I'm just doing what she told me to do. And but that lesson was one that stuck with me forever, realizing that the dynamics with couples is complicated.
Yeah.
And even though it may have been her money, you know, it's a mutual decision in most cases. And, you know, if they don't agree, I should stay out of it.
I'm just guessing that for financial planners, these dynamics oftentimes tend to play out right in front of your eyes, right in your own offices on a regular basis. Do you all have stories about one couple sort of going a little ballistic over one issue or another?
Oh, we absolutely do. And, you know, all of us is nodding here. I can recall a couple who came in because he had just received his bonus. And so she had called and said, this opens so many opportunities for us. We would like to invest the bonus. And in David's case, she was the only person that came in. And we said, okay, what goal should we handle with this bonus? She calls back a couple weeks later and said he decided to buy a boat. And his point was, it's my bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go, Alex.
Yeah,
is yours.
25 years ago, I had a couple that when I was relatively new in the business, I'd been in a business a couple of years, so we were talking about saving for retirement and then pre-retirement. And the husband was pretty open to the idea. In fact, that was one of the reasons he wanted to meet with us. And then after about a half an hour in the conversation, trying to just give some real basic, you know, projections of what money would do over a certain period of time.
Yeah.
The wife said, well, I'd like to interject here. Our religious beliefs, the world will not be in existence at our retirement, so I don't see the need to save.
Oh, really?
And I was thinking, wow, you know, I was early in the business and
how'd you handle that? Yeah.
So I said, well, that could be true, but what if this calculation is just off by about 20 years? They did start saving, and about 3 or 4 years later, they divorced.
Is that right?
And he stuck with me to this day.
And again, I bet you've all heard horror stories that even people arguing right in front of the financial advisor.
And you know, the tricky thing is even if it's obvious that one of the spouses is wrong, you don't want to get in the middle of that, because if they feel like you're taking sides, nothing gets accomplished.
Because you're a financial planner. You're not a couples counselor,
not a counselor
here, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The stats on this are fascinating. The finances are the leading cause of stress in relationships. According to a survey by SunTrust Bank, 35% of all respondents reported experiencing relationship stress, saying money was a primary cause of the friction. And according to a study published in the Family Relations Journal in 2012, arguing about money is a top predictor of divorce. That's according to Sonia Britt. She's a K-State University researcher and co-author of the study. My goodness, that lays it out pretty quickly, David.
Yeah, it really does. You know, and it lets you know that, you know, they talk about communication being the key to a relationship anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And these communications or conversations about money is really a sensitive topic. And yeah, so, you know, a lot of times it's all about power. Who's making the decision? Who's really controlling the dollars? But it's a tough one.
Arguments about money were longer and usually more intense than other types of marital disagreements. So we're walking right down the gun barrel here when it comes to this topic here. Okay. Well, let's explore some common issues and some potential solutions here when it comes to love and money. What about this notion of inequity, Barbara? One spouse is the primary wage earner and uses this as power in the relationship going forward.
And I hate to pitch to stereotypes, but I have to say that often the man believes that his salary has something to do with his value as a human being. I mean, that's just an old stereotype, but I've got to say that still walks into my office. Mm-hmm. You still see that. And in some cases, the gentleman doesn't have a true appreciation for the value that, say, a stay-at-home mother mm-hmm. is bringing to that relationship. Mm-hmm. There is a fascinating statistic, and it's on salary.com, and it says that the value of a stay-at-home mom in 2014 was $118,905. Hmm. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
And you can actually get on this website, and it will allow you to calculate your value based on the chores that you provide in the household. So it's kind of interesting.
Have you done that for couples before in your office?
Pardon me?
Have you done that for couples before in your office?
I will toss that statistic out, and sadly, it usually shuts the guy up. And that's not what I want to happen, because I want his participation, but
right.
It does seem to empower the woman, and she'll kind of rib him and say, see, you know, I'm contributing here. I have mm-hmm. a value. But if he's making all the money, often he feels like he should be controlling it. And you've got to get them to think as a couple and not as two individuals.
Alex, how do you do that when you're sitting in your office with a couple who's in that place?
Well, one of the things we do early, when we initially are hiring somebody, or allowing to be hired, should say, is to ask questions about money from both spouses and ask them to fill out the questionnaire individually without mm-hmm. cheating, so that we can see if they have different ideas about money that they were brought up with or that they've developed over a period of time. So we at least, it starts a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, that's, you know, early on, is to find out what they are thinking. Are they on the same page or not? And you will often see that they're not, or someone say, well, that's kind of her side, and I'm not involved in that. So it's, you know, it's something you have to approach. But again, it's a sensitive issue. But I've had a client, in particular a female client, call me of a married couple and ask me, is there any way that so-and-so can get money out of any of our accounts without me being aware of it? So, I mean, obviously that's a heads up,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and I'll, you know, give the honest answer, which, whatever it is. And then during the meeting, next time we meet, try to just talk a little bit about, you know, how they see money. But it's so tricky.
You know, David, it sounds like one key step here is setting up a cash flow system to empower the lower earning spouse. What's all that about?
Well, it is really, like Alex mentioned, trying to think as one,
mm-hmm.
so that you create a pool that, you know, just because moms stay at home, she doesn't have access to the cash, makes it really difficult for her mm-hmm. to manage the household. So, you know, setting aside some money that says, hey, you know what, you're in charge of running things, so this is how you know, this is money you have allotted to work with, you know, kind of take some of the stress out of it.
Right. Barbara?
And one of the things I have found that works is to allow the stay-at-home mom to have her own money that she can spend with no accounting. So she gets so much money a week, and if she wants to buy a new coat, it's winter still, isn't it? If she wants to buy a new winter coat, she does not have to account for that money with her husband. It is her money, it is hers to spend, and he has to do hands off. And that gives her a sense of, first of all, entitlement, it's a reward, and she has some power. I mean, she may be controlling the groceries, but how much fun are groceries?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So a little something for doing her job, a reward.
And that works, you found over the years.
I have found that it does work, yes.
Yeah. Alex?
A quick item. When people come in to do financial planning, for the most part, there's a certain agreement that they've already made because they're coming in as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe we see less of some of the real bad relationships in money because, as a starting point, they're coming in to delegate and saying they need some help, as opposed to people that are doing it on their own, and maybe very well. But if they're coming in, I think they've already established a relationship that, hey, they agree that they want to delegate and they want some advice in that. So I've heard it say one other way, too, in terms of individuals. You want to know what they owe,
mm-hmm.
what they own, what they earn, and then lastly, their credit score.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you could kind of divide this in, you know, a lot of our listeners here are single or divorced. So pre-marriage thoughtfulness, and then if you're already married, you know, the thought process to talk about money and deal with money if you're married. So if you can figure this out before you get married and have some sort of an agreement, then you're ahead of the pack. Most people aren't thinking that way.
Yeah.
And I love it when I do have clients that come in when they've just gotten married or just before they get married to start thinking about this, because that's where it needs to start before you start separating yourselves and going your own ways. You know, to come together as part of, you know, this marriage unit, let's have a together financial plan.
If our listeners want to chime in here with their questions here, perhaps these issues are part of your marriage and you're dealing with it right now. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. And then, Barbara, second marriages, which we have a lot of in this country these days, I'm guessing that tends to complicate things pretty quickly.
That can unravel pretty quickly. And I think where you really run into some problems with second marriages is the estate planning issues.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets the money after the death of one party?
I was going to say beneficiaries. Yeah.
Beneficiaries get tricky. And you've got life insurance, and then you also have retirement accounts and transfers on death, accounts that allow you to name a beneficiary. So I'll give you an example of one that just I thought was really tricky. The woman was the client. She married. The kids hated her, just hated her. They'd broken them up once before, but love, as it does, triumph. And so they did marry. And I said, so who's the beneficiary? And she said, well, my husband, of course. And I said, that's really nice. I'm really pleased about that. And I said, but have you ever thought that if you die first and then he dies, your money will go to him and your money then will go to his children after he dies, and you will disinherit your own children? And I believe she was in the estate planner's office. She found an attorney very quickly to do a trust within weeks.
Mm-hmm. So that's huge. That is so huge. You could just, not intentionally, totally disinherit your own kids, you know, in that second marriage scenario.
So that needs a little bit of help from a financial planner, it sounds
like. Yeah, it needs some, at least forethought. You know, because a lot of people is like, well, no, I want my spouse to get this. Well, yeah, fine. That makes perfect sense. But what about after your spouse is gone? Who gets it? And if without some proper planning, you know, you may totally disinherit your own kids.
So disagreement around support for kids, Alex, is pretty common.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, part of, again, on remarriages, you know, a prenup is just like, I think 99% do it. It's just, you know, because it does.
It's hard for people to face, though.
But
I mean,
listen, if you don't do it, then, you know, you might be finishing up your second one.
Yeah.
Marriage,
right.
That is. So, no, it's absolutely essential. And it's a tricky subject. And I think one way, you know, if I was talking to a client individually, kind of like off the record, I would say if this is a hard to approach, express your own values about money. And see what the feedback is, instead of just, you know, hitting them up what do you think about money? Here's, you know, express your views and see if you can get them to engage and give their reaction to that and their own, because you're going to face these sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, what have you found in at times when the woman makes more than the man, and that the impact that has on these traditional gender roles that we're all so familiar with?
Well, as I've mentioned, sometimes the man identifies himself, places his value on his salary. And so if he makes less than the woman that he was with, that can really have a blow to the ego. I'm sorry, guys, but
I've seen this.
And I think what you need to focus on instead is the opportunities, that there are more opportunities perhaps for the two of you because you have higher earning than if he did it. As far as I'm concerned, it's a pool of money. Does mm-hmm. it really matter
right.
who made it if it's going into the same joint pool and is getting spent like that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think Alex has very clearly stated that you have to talk to them and you have to get them to understand what it is about money that's important to them. And sometimes you have to step back and go, but is it appropriate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I have the right thought?
Yeah, I'm wondering about how marriages tend to handle money. I mean, does one person, David, tend to make the decisions and handle paying the bills and all that stuff? Or does that tend to be a joint
situation? You know, it kind of depends. But let me give you a couple of scenarios that I've seen. And it may not be valid with everybody. But I've seen with young couples, when they come together young, start a family, it's a whole lot easier for them to think of this pot of money that's coming in as one pot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you marry later in life, or if you marry a second or third time, you really start taking that possession thing. This is mine. That's yours.
Uh-huh.
And that becomes a lot more complicated to deal with than. But when you come together young and you both have nothing to start with, and then it starts growing, it's easy to think of it as this is our pool.
Mm-hmm.
But those later marriages, it gets complicated.
Does one approach, Alex, in your experience, tend to work better than the other?
Which approach?
Well, this idea of, you know, one person handling the money versus each person having their own accounts.
Yeah, I think that really is individual. But
you've seen it both ways.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it really just depends on the couple and how they relate with each other on all sorts of different items, you know. So I find, and we require, and we know it's a red flag, if only one person wants to come into the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's all obviously a red flag because there's going to be problems down the road. But, you know, it's all about trust as well. And I think either beginning marriages or second marriages, I think one thing, and my wife and I, we share our passwords. I mean, she has my password to my phone. She
right.
has my password to my iPad. She mm-hmm. has my password to all of our financial accounts. So there's nothing to hide there. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, though, I'll say, hey, what was that there? You know, it's hard not to, you know. Or
yeah.
when she's leaving packages in the car, you know, and I'll say, hey, what's going on there? But, you know,
yeah.
we all have that little bit of... you know, we're just trying to watch in our budget, but it's rarely that you have couples that argue over savings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your spenders and your savers. The arguments come is when one couple thinks they spend too much.
Are there times, Barbara, when it's better to keep your money separate?
You know, I've seen that done successfully. I used to work with a couple, and each of them was a doctor. And he paid some bills, she paid another. And I was doing some financial planning with them, and I asked her what her salary was, and she told me, and she said, and I pay these bills. And then I turned to him, and I said, so how much do you make? And he told me, and she looked at him and said, I didn't know you made that much. And he said, honey, it's why I'm paying the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked. I mean, it just worked. And this was one of the couples that David described, where they got together young, and they were on board, but they kept it separate. And there were no secrets,
mm-hmm.
but they just didn't share because the system was working.
Yeah. We go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888 as we talk about love and money in the aftermath of Valentine's Day 2016 here. Susie from Roland Park. Susie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks a bunch. I'm glad to be here. Well, I kind of have a perspective from being a stay-at-home mom in my first marriage and being a breadwinner, either the larger one or the smaller one in my second marriage. Mm-hmm. In my first marriage, my husband traveled. He was in the military. So when he was gone, I was a stay-at-home mom. I did all the bills. I did all the financial planning, took care of everything. But then it was very difficult when he came back home because then I was no longer, I guess, driving the bus. And so it was just a weird thing for me to deal with. It was a little disconcerting and probably led to the dissolution of our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
My second husband, though, we are night and day on money. He is the kind of person that knows his checking account balance down to the very penny at any given time. And I am, as some of my friends would say, typical girl. I'm like, oh, I think I've got $100 in there. Let's go buy some shoes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things. So we dated for quite a while before we got married, and we shared a residence. So we split bills kind of that way based on the percentage of who made whatever. And then we've been married now for 20 some odd years. We do not have a joint checking account. We tried it for, I think, 3 months, and it just didn't work.
Why didn't it work, Susie?
I don't think he liked to see what I spent money on.
Yeah.
And I would track it in Quicken, to see am I overspending on, toys or something. We have children. And it really was just a difference in just how we saw money and how we used it. Right now, he's the larger of the two breadwinners. At one point in our career, I was. And so it's kind of gone back and forth, but I do see how him being the primary breadwinner is important to him. I've definitely seen that.
Are you guys able to talk about it, talk about money, Susie, or is that a tough topic for you guys to navigate?
It is horribly tough to navigate.
Yeah.
In fact, honestly, it's one of those things we just kind of don't talk about unless it's like a large expense, like a vehicle or something
right.
like that. But we kind of have this unspoken thing where since he does make more than I do, he takes care of the bigger bills, like the
right.
house payments and the insurance and car payments and things like that. And then I take care of kind of what we call the inside the house thing. So the food, the kids' supplies, things like that. So we've kind of worked out over the years this balance of who takes care of what.
Yeah.
And it works well for us. But, yeah, there were times when it was just like I remember I think I overdrew the checking account one time, and he just couldn't understand how I could do that. And I was like, because I goofed, it was no big deal. But to him, it was, that's why he has great credit, and mine is like, in the middle.
Yeah. Well, Susie, I really appreciate your candor. You're just a great phone call. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Love the show.
Thanks, Susie. This notion, Barbara, how do you get couples together and to talk about money when it's difficult for them to do it? And they oftentimes have to do that before they come to see you or while they're seeing you, that kind of thing.
Well, I think coming to see me actually is a good first step.
Right.
It's like, okay, we're this much on board together. We're here together. We're interested in moving forward together. But there are other ways. I work with some couples, and frankly, I'm in this group where we sit down every week, we balance the checkbook together, and we do the Quicken data input.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what I'm doing. I know what he's doing. Because it's very easy. We'd fallen into the trap of, I'm pretty good with money, and so I was just handling it.
Right.
And we realized one day that if I was to die suddenly, we're not entirely sure he would have known where everything was.
Right.
And I have other clients that do that, too. They get together every week, and it's just part of the routine. If it's really a difficult thing, I'm thinking about your caller here, do it on a date. Kind of have the discussion.
Yikes.
And that, well,
it's gonna ruin that date, Barbara.
No. I'm thinking have the discussion and then go out for a nice dinner and a glass of wine and kind of shake it off.
Yeah.
And get back to the couple's part of the relationship.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of clients that have done the his, hers, and ours, where they have one checking account that handles all the household bills that they
right.
both contribute into on an equitable basis, and then they still maintain their own separate accounts for discretionary spending.
So there's a variety of ways forward.
Lots
here.
Of different ways.
Okay.
Whatever works.
Janet from Leawood. Janet, good morning.
Hi. I have a question about the file and suspend change to the law. I was planning on doing that. However, my full eligibility isn't reached until July of this year. I'm wondering, do you have to reach full eligibility age before you can do the file and suspend? I'm wondering if I can sort of beat the deadline.
Hmm.
I have bad news, Janet. You have to reach full eligibility by April 29th of 2016.
That's
I'm sorry, Jen. I pushed the wrong button.
Oh,
go
I thought
ahead.
She hung up on you. So
are you there, Jen?
That's okay. I heard it. That's pretty clear. I really appreciate the help.
Well, okay. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
Well, I appreciate it anyway. Thank you.
All right, Janet. Thanks for the good call. I appreciate it. I want to thank our financial planners here. We're out of time today. Alex Petrovic, founder of Petrovic Financial Services, David Jackson with the Financial Planning Association, and Barbara McMahon, president of Innovest Financial Partners in Brookside. Thank you all for a very good conversation.
Great
thank
being with you.
Thank you.
Enjoyed
it.